they cannot go down this path without consultation and engagement with the Congress.
Senator Begich weighs in on intervention in Syria. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, teaching kids who speak limited English with a limited budget.
Our overall budget allocation for this coming school year is substantially less than it was in the previous year. In fact, altogether, equivalent of about 10 positions were lost.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
The White House is mobilizing for potential military strikes against the Syrian government. After last week's chemical weapons attack that killed hundreds of civilians, the administration appears ready to intervene. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the strikes may come without congressional approval, and some in Alaska's delegation are not okay with that.
The United States' 6th Fleet is sailing in the Mediterranean Sea, and the 5th Fleet is nearby in Bahrain. The Pentagon is mobilizing forces for long-range bombings or cruise missile strikes. Secretary of State John Kerry said Monday the U.S. government is holding the government of Bashar al-Assad responsible for the chemical attack last week.
The indiscriminate slaughter of civilians, the killing of women and children and innocent bystanders by chemical weapons is a moral obscenity. By any standard, it is inexcusable, and despite the excuses and equivocations that some have manufactured, it is undeniable.
President Barack Obama has long said a chemical attack would be his red line. This is reportedly the second such attack, but much larger than the previous. U.S. Senator Mark Begich, speaking on the public radio program Talk of Alaska Tuesday, says he's skeptical of engaging.
They cannot go down this path without consultation and engagement with the Congress.
But that may happen. Strikes could begin any day, and Congress is not due back in Washington until September 9th. Begich says he cannot support the actions if the United States acts alone. British and French leaders have indicated they're willing to support the military strikes.
It can't be the U.S. carrying the weight of the world all the time. You know, Saudi Arabia and Jordan and others in that region need to step up to the plate. It means other countries around the globe, and this includes people like Russia and China. They need to step up and quit playing the politics of the Middle East for leverage for their own political purposes and economic purposes.
Russia and China will not side with the United States in the conflict. Russia has proven to be Syria's largest backer, and both Moscow and Beijing are protecting Damascus on the United Nations Security Council. Neither of the Republicans in the delegation would talk about the issue. A spokesman for Representative Don Young says he's opposed to military intervention, that the country is not ready for another war after fighting two for a dozen years. He also wants the president to seek approval from Congress. Young voted for the 2002 Iraq War resolution. Senator Lisa Murkowski declined several requests for comment. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
This year, Alaska got the okay to start judging schools using its own measurements instead of the standards required by the federal No Child Left Behind law. But with new metrics come new and more difficult tests, and state officials are expecting to see student performance fall as a result. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
It's rare for standardized tests to get any love. Most kids hate taking them. It's not uncommon to hear teachers and education experts say you can't get a real sense of how much students learn in a year from a few hours of filling out bubbles. In the spring of 2015, expect a whole new complaint that for the past decade, Alaska's assessment tests have been telling us that our kids are smarter than they really are. Representative Lynn Gaddis was less than thrilled when she heard this from Deputy Education Commissioner Les Morse at a legislative hearing on Wednesday.
But next year, my child, still the same kid, still the same reader, could very well fall way down below because of our new standards.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, in 2015, that is potentially possible.
That year, what we've gotten to know as the standards-based assessments will be replaced with something new, and that something will almost certainly be more challenging. The state committed to adopting a new test when it decided to implement Alaska-specific education standards. The education department also believes there is a need for a harder test because of the high remediation rates for Alaska students entering college, and because they're hearing from employers that graduates from the state's public high schools aren't prepared for the workforce. But the anticipation of a drop in performance has left some legislators with heartburn.
I could have been doing summer school, I could have been doing tutoring, and I've lost 2 years I can't get back.
That's Representative Tammy Wilson, a Republican from North Pole. She expressed disappointment that students were going to see lower scores even if they were learning at the same rate. Wilson also wanted to know if the state could just grade students on a harder curve before the new assessments were adopted.
If we knew right now, even before the new test began, that proficient meant reading at grade level or doing math at grade level, even if it dropped a little bit for my student, knowing that they're on grade level, which right now you say we don't know if proficient and grade level are interchangeable, you know, why would we wait another 2 years for our newest testing when we can change those cut scores tomorrow if we wanted to?
But it's not as simple as that, according to Deputy Commissioner Morse. First of all, the state would have to go through a long vetting process to make sure that adjusting the scores was appropriate. By the time that would be complete, schools would already be using the new test. Morse says that even if the state could quickly change the rating scale, it would be like comparing apples to oranges. The problem isn't with the test. It's that more is being expected out of students.
You could take the current assessment, but it's an assessment of some other standards, and you could say we're going to raise the bar, but it's technically kind of hard to do that and say it gives you a new honest picture, because it doesn't. You just actually told them, here's how you score if we raise the cut score on an easier test than what you're going to face in the future.
What students will face in the future has yet to be determined. The Department of Education is pilot testing what's called the Smarter Balanced Assessment, which about half the states in the country could implement in the next couple of years. But the state is also considering the more expensive option of creating its own test. Education Commissioner Michael Hanley says that in the interim, parents should be asking schools what their students can be doing to meet the new standards instead of just relying on the testing results they get this year. The department hopes to have a new test selected by the end of the academic calendar. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Students are returning to the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus for classes beginning this week. But this will be the last year they will have the opportunity to seek career advice from staff. The Office of Career Services will close in December 2014 as part of what the university calls a budgetary pullback. UAF spokeswoman Miriam Grimes says the closure will save $270,000.
When we were looking at our budget picture, one of the things that our leadership decided to do was look at rather than doing an across-the-board pullback, look at specific vertical cuts that they could make. And this was one. It's a different philosophy of budgeting, and is one that our leadership is working toward.
In late July, Chancellor Brian Rogers sent a memo to faculty and staff outlining measures the university can take as it faces an $8.5 million shortfall. Employees affected by the closure will be reassigned elsewhere in the university system. Grimes says it's still unclear whether UAF will be able to offer services like those in the Career Services Office in the future.
They offer career counseling, help with interviews, resumes, things like that for students. They also put on job fairs, career fairs, things like that on campus. And our intention is to find a way to offer those services to our students, yes. What that's going to look like right now, we don't know.
The Office of Career Services is currently the only department that will be eliminated, but the move comes after the loss of a federal contract. The loss of a federal contract forced the university to downsize the Arctic Region Supercomputing Center last year. The Office of Electronic Miniaturization discontinued operations in 2010. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, state lawmakers get a taste of farming in Alaska.
This is the only place in the world, this Palmer region, that has Yensis soil.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
The Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com.
The number of immigrant, refugee, and other students who need help with English is growing in parts of Anchorage, but the school district's funds are spread thin because of last year's cuts, and they don't have the money to hire new teachers or tutors. KSKA's Daisha Eaton visits Mears Middle School in South Anchorage to learn more.
This fall, Nestor Kunanen enters Mears Middle School in South Anchorage with the odds stacked against him.
I learned English from the TV for what, and watching Disney Channel. Yeah, I watched American movies a lot.
Kunanen is what the Anchorage School District calls an English language learner, or ELL student. Today, the round-faced eighth grader with an easy smile is registering for classes in the Mears gym. He just moved to Anchorage from the Philippines. He says his favorite subject is science.
I'm hoping to try to dissect the frog because I haven't dissected a frog yet.
In order to succeed in science classes, Kunanen will have to pick up an array of special subject-specific words that he likely didn't learn while watching American movies in the Philippines. It's a steep learning curve. The graduation rate for ELL seniors has been stuck between 40 and 50% for years. And unless something changes soon, the district's goal to have a 90% graduation rate for all students by 2020 seems unlikely. Kunanen is on target to graduate with the class of 2018. He seems to speak well, but then this happens.
I forgot the word.
That's typical, says ELL tutor Pam Strickland. And she says language isn't the only thing the kids need to learn.
The kids don't know how the system works. You know, they need to know that you have to raise your hand or, you know, different cultural things that they bring that they need to know the difference here in this, and how the classroom runs. And then trying to help them understand, make the connections between the vocabulary. A lot of subject matter will translate easily, like math. The symbols are the same, but just translating the vocabulary and then learning to fit in.
Strickland, who bounces between Mears and nearby Golden View, is the only ELL tutor for both schools. She says the number of students that she works with has tripled over the past few years, but the district hasn't hired any more help, and that worries her.
I think hiring more people would be a quick solution. If we're going to say we're going to service English language students, then I think that has to be what we're doing. And it's hard to do when you have 80 students.
It's a problem that Phil Farson, who runs the English Language Learner program for the Anchorage School District, is well aware of. He says the ELL population is shifting in Anchorage, growing in outlying areas.
We're seeing a gradual shift of ELL students into the southern parts of the city. And schools that in the past that traditionally had very few or no ELL students are finding that they have 20, 30, 40 kids.
But because of $25 million in budget cuts last school year, Farson says he's stretched so thin that he can't hire additional staff and stay within budget. No ELL teachers were cut last year, but tutors were.
Our overall budget allocation for this coming school year is substantially less than it was the previous year. In fact, altogether, equivalent of about 10 positions were lost in terms of our, what we call our paraprofessionals or our tutors.
That leaves less staff for more kids, about 100 tutors for around 5,600 ELL students in the district. Back at Mears, Valerie Davidson is registering her daughter, Kylie. Her daughter is Yupik, and she speaks English well. But Davidson is passionate about the importance of providing support for ELL students. She makes her point by asking me a question in Yupik.
You ready? Daringan? Daringan ka? Daringan? Wow. Well, since you didn't answer, I'm afraid you're not going to be able to be in the advanced classes and you're not going to be able to get the most out of your education because I just asked you if you understood.
And so, since you didn't respond, then you're just not going to be able to advance with the rest of the kids.
Davidson says having enough English language teachers and tutors is critical to ensuring that every student gets an equal chance at an education. Back on the other side of the gym, Kunanan says he's excited to start school. But you can hear some uncertainty in his voice.
I guess I'll have new friends here and a new experience.
Kunanan says he hopes to graduate from high school, go to college, and maybe become a scientist. Administrators say they anticipate additional budget cuts this school year. No word yet on whether programs for English language learners will be included. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Head Start serves more than 250 Southeast Alaska preschoolers, but they'll have less time in the classroom this year due to budget cuts tied to sequestration. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld provides this look at the program and the impacts of lower funding.
A visit to the Guthrie home in Petersburg means getting checked out by a curious but cautious black lab.
Shadow, you stinker bug. Okay, back to your rooms. Come on, let's go.
Savannah Guthrie, her husband Alex, and their three kids have all been part of the town's Head Start program, run by Tlingit-Haida Central Council.
My first little girl craved socialization. We couldn't give her enough of it, and so for her, I thought it would be a really good place to get to socialize.
Guthrie started taking her daughter just 2 days a week. Soon, both of them and later the other Guthrie kids became regulars.
You were encouraged to come in and sit down and hang out if you wanted to all day, encouraged to come to lunch and bring your other younger kids and, you know, sit and have lunch and socialize and hang out. So I really liked that aspect.
Family contact is a key part of Head Start, a federal preschool education and screening program that began in the mid-60s. Along with working with kids, it helps parents learn more about caring for young children and preparing them for school. But there will be less of that this year. Sequestration's across-the-board cuts means Southeast Head Start programs will start 3 weeks late. That affects about 260 children at 15 centers in 9 cities. Former Head Start teacher Karen McCullough of Petersburg supervises the program in Southern Southeast.
All the research has shown that socializing children, getting them used to routines, getting them used to playing with other children and relating with other adults, and through those experiences, increasing their language base, really helps children when they enter into the public school system.
Head Start also provides preschoolers with breakfast and lunch and teaches them basic hygiene such as brushing their teeth. Some don't get that at home. Regional Program Director Albert Reinhardt says staff are also trained to spot physical or behavioral problems best addressed at an early age.
We help identify any potential issues that might hold them up later on with their schooling, you know, hearing tests, eye tests, and also other more severe type of disabilities.
The budget cuts will reduce classroom days by close to 10%. It will also lower hours and pay for the region's 55 staffers. Head Start in Southeast is run by the Juneau-based Tlingit-Haida Central Council. As a tribal program, it has a preference for Native children. Another priority is low-income families, but others, such as the Guthries, still get in. Reinhardt says he polled staff about the best way to address the budget cut.
We provided options from a shorter work week to ending the school year earlier or starting the next school year later. And our survey basically overwhelmingly showed support for a later startup.
Officials say funding has been flat in recent years, and that doesn't keep up with inflation. A number of grants are no longer available, which has hurt the program too. Southeast Head Start classrooms open for students on September 23rd. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Petersburg.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by The Salmon Project, an Alaska salmon are food, annual traditions, and a source of jobs, businesses, and community. Information on caring for salmon habitat or your weekend catch, plus salmon love stories at salmonlove.com. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
State officials say they'll withdraw funding for a $15 million Huna dock unless the southeast city changes its location. The money was appropriated by the legislature in part to support the town's Icy Strait Point tourist attraction 40 air miles west of Juneau. Community and Regional Affairs Director Scott Ruby sent a letter earlier this month threatening to take away the grant. He also put a hold on any project spending. He says it's because the cruise industry doesn't like the dock's location.
The primary use was going to be a cruise ship dock, but also when it's not being used for a cruise ship dock, would be constructed such that it could be used for other purposes, and you know, freight and ferries or whatever. It's a multi-use dock.
Two other proposed locations are acceptable to the industry. Huna City Administrator Bob Prunella says officials won't comment until they meet with the state. That's scheduled to happen Thursday. Sitka's Bert Stedman represents Huna in the Senate. He says local leaders need to decide whether to move ahead.
I think it's a good idea for Huna to have a dock, but you need to build facilities that are going to help the industry prosper and move forward along with the community.
Huna has about 2 weeks to respond to the state. Officials will then decide whether to block funding. The original legislative grant was for $17 million. Lawmakers last spring diverted $2 million to a clinic project approved by Huna leaders. Stedman diverted another $5 million to a swimming pool at the state's Mount Edgecombe Boarding High School in Sitka. Governor Sean Parnell vetoed that provision, saying the money should stay in Huna. On a farm in Palmer, the sweet taste of summer can be found in an acre of big, plump strawberries that are destined for sale at farmers markets. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, a recent tour of Matanuska Valley Farms is helping state legislators get in touch with Alaska's agricultural potential.
One rarely thinks of strawberries in connection with our state, but Palmer producer Arthur Keyes realized the potential for growing the sweet berries on his farm some years ago.
There's about 8,000 strawberry plants, and I think this is our fourth or fifth year now producing strawberries.
Now, this summer's strawberry crop is being harvested. I pick a ripe one from a plant loaded with them.
An apple. Oh my God. Look at the size of it, and it doesn't get all hollow in the center.
Right.
The berries are huge and delicious.
I'm producing on about 3 acres here. It's pretty intense. I have about 15 employees on this 3 acres. You get into these bigger farms, and you're going to see 20 and 30 employees working on those farms, and they're using mechanized harvesting, and everything we do here is by hand.
Keyes says Alaska's long summer days and unusual soil combine to make his berries not only larger but juicier and sweeter than berries grown in California. Keyes gestures toward another acre, this one planted with onions.
I call them Yensis sweet onions, Y-E-N-S-I-S. And I get that word because this is the only place in the world, this Palmer region, that has Yensis soil. And it's a silt soil derived from the glaciers that we have off the Matanuska Glacier and the Aklutna Glacier. It's a combination.
It's the Yensis soil that gives Palmer vegetables their sweet juiciness compared with vegetables imported from outside.
Our Alaskan carrots up to 8 times sweeter than a California carrot. Strawberries, potatoes, name a crop, it's going to be sweeter. Broccoli, Alaskan broccoli. Anybody like Alaskan broccoli?
Yeah.
I mean, is there any other broccoli you'd rather eat? No. So these crops during our long days are developing carbs all day long. Then we get a cool night because of our latitude. We get these cool nights that come in and those carbs convert to sugars. And then you end up at the end of the season with these crops that are phenomenal.
Keyes Glacier Valley Farm was the first stop on a farm tour organized by Representative Bill Stultz, a Republican from Chugiak, who is urging state lawmakers to recognize Alaska's agricultural potential. Agriculture has long been a low priority for the legislature. Stultz wants to remedy that. He sponsored House Resolution 1, which creates an Alaska Food Resource Working Group. The move got gubernatorial approval to develop state policies aimed at increasing the purchase and consumption of Alaska-grown products.
We got the ball in the air on elevating agricultural issues and food issues to the cabinet level.
The farm tour introduced lawmakers and department commissioners to Alaska produce literally from the ground up. A USDA agricultural census from last year puts total receipts from state agriculture from 2011 at $31.7 million. No threat to big oil, but then you can't eat oil. Food security is a growing issue in Alaska. Stoltz warns that if transportation to our state was interrupted by a national disaster, Alaskans would only have a few weeks' supply on hand.
We have a lot more capacity, especially on the cold route, vegetables, potatoes, and carrots, and to grow a lot more of our own.
Few farmers in the valley mass market their produce. One who does is Paul Hubert, who sells at four major supermarket chains and to restaurants and the military under the Gold Nugget and Palmer Produce brands. Hubert has a warehouse near Palmer where semi-trucks haul away boxes of lettuce, kale, carrots, and broccoli destined for other areas of the state. Getting produce to markets far away in top condition starts with cooling, he says, pointing to a huge machine near the door.
If you folks don't know what it is, it's a vacuum cooler. For years and years and years, they tried every way in the world to ship head lettuce and leaf lettuce and stuff like that to the East Coast because we had the field heat. We never took it out. That machine, we can put 150 cases of head lettuce in it.
Hubert says one of the big problems for Alaska growers is a labor shortage. But one of the perks, pesticides are not needed in Alaska because our state's isolation keeps pests out. Legislator Stoltz says consumers have the power to demand more Alaska products in local stores. Then retailers will comply.
My resolution isn't a mandate, it's a roadmap of how we can do better for agriculture in Alaska.
Stoltz says it's time state agencies helped to do that. In Palmer, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Ellen Lockyer in Palmer. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Platt is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources. How do you get men to wear a life jacket when the fact is that 90% of those who die in boating accidents in Alaska are men? Well, most men won't listen to this message, but they might listen to you. So have them pledge to wear a life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. That's pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back home. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.